Warning, the following broadcast is offensive, marginally funny, and contains no educational value whatsoever. It is intended for immature audiences only. It's time to get off your ass and riot. Listen in as Big Fat John and Judo Larry M. talk about whatever they damn well want to talk about. So turn up the volume, clean the crap out of your ears, and get ready to be entertained. Because we're ready to riot right now.
Okay, it's The Riot back again this week after taking an extended little bit of a hiatus. I think we're about 10 days late between shows. This is your host, Big Fat John.
And Judo Larry M.
And Judo Larry M, we did have a little bit of a situation where we weren't able to come right on last week after the elections. And really, the reason for that is we were too busy laughing.
We were too busy laughing and maybe a little celebration.
A little?
A little celebration.
And I have been bathing in liberal tears for the last week and a half.
Filthy crocodile tears. Over the fact that the Judo Larry M prediction of at least 51 seats and for the Republicans. And John, I think you said 53?
I said 53, which right now is the exact number.
Yep, and there might be one more to
one more coming our way in Louisiana, because Mary Landrieu is toast in Louisiana. There's no way she could pull this out, Judo Larry M, because I think, you know, they have runoffs in Louisiana. If you don't get 50% of the vote, you go into a runoff with the next closest person.
That's right.
Now, at the time the election was called, Landrieu was ahead of her challenger by one percentage point, basically.
Right.
But the point is that there were two other Republicans in that race that siphoned off 13% of the vote.
Right. So when it comes down to just the two of them,
guess who those other Republicans are going to vote for?
Probably the Republican.
Yeah. 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 She's toast. And you know she's toast because she switched her, she changed her mind when it came to the Keystone pipeline. She actually sponsored the bill in the Senate for the pipeline. So she's trying very hard to buy a couple of votes before the runoff.
She is trying hard for her pipeline.
Yes. Oh, she wants the pipe.
Oh.
Oh, so hard.
Yeah, a little political humor.
A little political sexual humor there.
Yes.
But Judo Larry M, before we go any further, let's do our usual pimping. This is The Riot. You can find us on thatriotshow.com, thatriotshow.com. You can also follow us anywhere great podcasts are heard. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker.com, Podomatic, where we are, in fact, one of the top 50 conservative podcasts on Podomatic. So a little bit of a applause for that. I don't think they really understand what kind of conservative we are.
We're the kind that aren't as proper.
Yeah. In other words, we're really not conservatives. We're libertarians.
Yeah.
Who really don't care about joking a lot. We really don't care about making fun of people. We use big, dirty words. Filthy, dirty words, Judo Larry M.
We don't make fun of people.
No, we do make fun of people.
Oh, we do? Oh, okay. I thought you said we don't. We don't.
And we say horrible words like fuck and shit and pussy and cunt and all these horrible, horrible words, Judo Larry M, that would probably
don't
offend.
Use, yes. But since they're usually directed at liberals, maybe they're not offended.
Right, right. So if you're a typical conservative who, like, you know, sings hallelujah every weekend and, you know, doesn't say bad words and believes in censorship, and
this may not be the top of your list.
Yeah, this isn't the top of your list. But if you just believe in individual liberty, freedom, and what the founding principles of this country were, then you found yourself a home, Judo Larry M.
This is the show for you.
Absolutely. All right. So that pimping was done. Oh, also YouTube. You can go to YouTube, check us out. Anywhere you go, just look for That Riot Show, That Riot Show, and you'll find all our great past episodes, riotous clips on YouTube exclusively, where you get these like little 2 and 3 minute snippets, the highlights of shows, which is usually what people like, Judo Larry.
Judo Larry M is endorsing.
Endorsing
the riotous clips. I'm telling you.
Nice.
I'm not kidding. I know I'm on them, but if you just need a quick little laugh,
absolutely.
I'm telling you, they're funny.
If you need a little laugh,
A little pick-me-up.
Yeah, it'd be the equivalent of like a little prostate probing in the middle of the day, just as a pick-me-up.
I was going to say it's more like five-hour energy in a two-minute clip.
All right, Judah Larium. So it's been a while, so we're not going to spend too much time on it, but let's briefly touch on the elections. Judah Larium, this was, and I know it's overused, but this really was an election of historic proportions. When you consider that in the House, Republicans now have more seats, or will have in the next Congress, more seats than they've had since Woodrow Wilson.
That's awesome.
There was, as of right now, a 9-seat swing in the Senate. So it went from 45 Republican seats, like you said. I'm sorry, right now it's 8. It's eight, going to 53. But it looks very likely that it'll be 54 seats. But even at 53 seats, that is a tremendous swing. And then, to top it all off, it wasn't just the national stage that swung heavily back to the right. It's also the governorships. A lot of governorships, especially in what were considered very safe Democratic states like Illinois,
Virginia,
and Virginia, went over to the Republican side.
Yeah. That was actually, for me, that was the most surprising thing. Like, even when I said that I thought the Republicans would wind up with 51, I did have in the back of my head, well, they might skip up to 52 or something. Like, you know, that wasn't so surprising.
Right.
Because outside of our predictions, I did think they'd get the majority. They'd get over the
over
51, or at least 51. The governorship surprised the hell out of me.
Right.
I mean, I did not think that some of those outcomes would happen.
And you know what's ironic? The only times that President Obama actually did hit the campaign trail in support of Democrats was largely at the state house level. He really didn't, the Senate Democrats really didn't want him running with them. They didn't want them, they didn't want his support, because he's poison at this point.
Yeah, he was given the get lost by a lot of guys. You know, even that guy, Mark Pryor, who was down in Arkansas, you know, and Democrats can spin this however they want, but you know you're in a lot of trouble when you're having I think it was one of the Senate races, and I forgot the woman's name, she's running on the Democrat line, and they just asked her, did you vote for Obama in, the last election? And it took her 15 minutes of dancing around to say, well, we have secret ballots in this country.
Right, right, right.
Like, just say yes or no. I mean, it's not the most important question in the world. But
right.
If you can't answer that directly and you can't say, yeah, I voted for this guy with my
vote,
that's because you've made the political calculation that it's going to cost you.
Sure.
There's no other reason. Think about it. If he were still as popular as he was in 2008, you'd be bragging about it. Say, yeah, I voted for him. He's my guy.
Well, it just goes to show you. Actually, let me say this first. In the governor's races where Obama did make an appearance, they lost everything. Like, he showed up in Illinois.
Right.
He showed up. And I'm not 100% sure. I think he may have shown up in Wisconsin. I'm not 100% sure, because the one governor Democrats hate in this country is the guy up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Scott Walker.
Yeah. Who, has withstood. When you talk about, when you hear liberals whine about outside money influencing elections, when you hear about the Koch brothers, which is bullshit, by the way, because they're only 12th on the list of biggest donors. You know, the biggest donors are still unions,
right?
That go left wing. But Walker has been the target of what, three different elections, two regular elections and a recall
and two elections
where he's come out on top every time.
Yeah,
and all this outside money. And again, I'm not complaining, because I don't think it's a big deal if outside money comes in.
I really don't. I'm fine with it.
But for you liberals who whine about outside money and dark money and bullshit like that, you do a little bit of that on your own self, and it was all directed at Scott Walker.
They have been so determined to defeat this guy, and he keeps winning.
He keeps winning because the shit he does works. Like, when he goes after unions, when he goes after public education teachers and debt and shit like that, guess what? It works. People see through the nonsense right now. People don't want to end up like Michigan or Detroit in particular, where an entire major U.S. city goes into debt, into bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
All right? So, fuck y'all when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my point is that, historically speaking now, the greatest midterm swings have all been from left to right. It's this year. It was the 2010 elections, I believe, also swung tremendously when the House went back to Republican hands. And also in 2004,
right?
Four with Newt Gingrich.
That was 94.
94, I'm sorry. Gingrich, but my point is, when you rank the biggest midterm swings, it's always gone from left to right.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that, for example, during Bush's term, they went from right to left. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, but I mean, you could probably cite
the magnitude of the biggest ones.
Right.
Have always been from left to right.
Yeah, and there's always been that switch whenever Democrats don't perform.
Yeah,
I mean, I've noticed they get elected, sure, obviously, and people give them a shot, but if they don't perform, and the other thing which drives me crazy about Democrats is, you know, they try to say that the Republicans have no plan, they have no ideas, and it's the same old message. And really, what's different about your message? Yeah, war on women. Yeah,
backfired. Big
racism.
Yeah,
you hate the poor.
More taxes, more government.
Yeah, we need more taxes, more government, and you keep getting your asses kicked on that slate.
Well, what happens is, and I really just to interrupt you, I think this is really the case. I think when Democrats come in on a wave, it's always because of failure of Republicans.
Oh well, usually
when Democrats get voted out of office, it's because they've actually implemented their bullshit. There's a difference, right? So, for example, when there was the big Democratic takeover in 2020, what was it? When in the middle of Bush's last term, what would that have been? 2006.
Okay.
Like, I remember at the time we were doing a show called The Council of Three, and I remember saying that at the time,
right,
people were sick of the Iraq War. So they voted in a lot of Democrats into the House with the specific purpose of ending the Iraq War. And I remember saying at the time, I wonder if all those Democrats, what would be considered conservative Democrats in the southern states, if they realized that by voting for Democrats, they were voting for idiots they would never vote for, like Nancy Pelosi, like Barney Frank,
Harry Reid,
and Harry Reid, because that's who you're voting for in a leadership position. And of course they didn't. And of course what happens? You get shit like Obamacare. You get overregulation of the financial industry. Economies tank. Obamacare's a failure.
Stimulus.
You're right. And all that nonsense then comes back to bite you in the ass. Because why? Because you have Nancy Pelosi. For example, you could have voted for a conservative Democrat in Georgia or in Virginia hoping to end the war in 2006.
Right.
And all you accomplished was putting Nancy Pelosi from a minority leader into a majority leader, into Speaker of the House.
Yeah. Though conservative Democrat is becoming more and more an oxymoron.
Right, right. Well, right now, a Republican and a conservative Democrat are the same shade of I don't know what. You know what I mean? They're both occupying the same space as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And even Republicans, you know, people say, oh, you Republicans. Hey, we're not Republicans. I keep saying this over and over again. We're not Republicans. We're not conservatives. We just view them. We view Republicans to be slightly less
offensive.
Less offensive than Democrats. Exactly.
And closer to what we'd like to see happen.
Right.
I mean, I don't agree with you completely that the Republicans are just Democrats light. But I do think that there are distinctions, and I'm a lot more comfortable with the Republicans being in charge, especially after some Canadian parliament guy penned a letter saying, why don't we love Obama?
Yeah, I saw that. What nonsense.
And I was like, I said, the fact that this dummy doesn't understand, you know, American politics, and he even stipulated in the article, he goes, of course, we Canadians fade much more to the left than most Americans. I was like, well, that's your answer right there, shit for brains.
Right, exactly.
I've been hitting the head with a puck too much.
So at the end of these elections, you know, the soul searching comes in for the loser. And of course, the weird part is that you have Democrats. So far, Judah Lyriam, here's what I've heard, the reasons why they lost. I've heard voter suppression. I've heard intimidation of young and minority voters. I've heard gerrymandering be cited as a reason for this.
Oh, please.
Which, of course, gerrymandering doesn't apply to statewide races like Senate races.
It's not costing
or to governor's
them
races.
Even if it did, it's not costing them.
Yeah.
Now, look, their problem is low voter turnout.
Yes.
A lot of Democrats, and in particular minorities who normally vote for the simply didn't turn out. They didn't turn out.
They never do. In midterms, they never do.
Right. Their numbers are down. And of course, the Democrats' favorite thing, every presidential election, young people really didn't turn out this time. They normally don't turn out in big numbers, but they really didn't turn out.
Well, they're all disillusioned. All of them thought they'd be getting free iPhones and free college educations because those are the people who voted for Obama twice.
That's right.
Right?
I mean, look, even when guys like Michael Moore, about 6 months ago, I read something about how disappointed he is with Obama, that all he can do is shake his head. Let me tell you something. If that fat communist doesn't like him, then nobody does.
Right. The problem with Obama is, like we've always said, when you're a liberal Democrat, you are beholden to causes. I'm not going to say you're beholden to corporate interests, because I don't think that's necessarily the case.
No.
But you're beholden to various lunatic fringes. You're beholden to the environmentalists. You're beholden to the young students, to the communists, to the socialists, to the feminists.
Not communists and socialists, but
the environmentalists. You always have 100 different causes under the name of liberalism that you've got to satisfy.
Yeah, that's who left-wingers are, though.
Of course.
I've always told people, they're cause people. You know, if you need a cause fought for, like, you know, pro-life or pro-choice or against the death penalty or against...
whatever.
You know, anything. That's their thing. Left-wingers, by their very nature, they're very cause-oriented. They love to be a part of, you know, global warming, and they fight for it like crazy, and they get all worked up about it. But, like, for people who are actually going to, like, run the store and take care of things, that's why you vote for Republicans. You know,
it's true. We've always said it. If you want someone to rally behind a cause or to get someone to lead a cause, get yourself a liberal Democrat. If you want things to work, if you want things to run smoothly...
all the things you take for granted in your life. You know, it's one thing to be part of, like, Occupy Wall Street and sit around and smell all day, but some grown-up actually has to pay the bills.
Exactly.
And those are the Republicans.
I love that analogy. I think we said it before, and let me tell you something. This election, I've never seen so much hatred and pure nonsense come out of liberals on Twitter. I just enjoyed being on Twitter that night. So, you know, like a whole slew of liberals, like, just came out of nowhere saying, this is why the American public is so stupid. They don't know what they're voting for. They need someone to tell. I have never heard more fascist principles come out of somebody's mouth than listening to any liberal after this election.
Right. And that's their favorite attack on you.
Oh, of course.
Like, if you disagree with them, you're a Nazi.
Yes.
You're a Nazi. You know you wear a Klan outfit. Like, you know, it's like, why'd you goose step in your brown shirt, asshole? Like, they just,
I see you've been reading my Twitter timeline.
Oh, I've read all of them. You probably have a little mustache.
Yeah. Zeke Heil, motherfucker.
How many ovens do you have in your kitchen? Like, you know, it's all that stuff. And I must tell you, John doesn't know this, but I do read all this stuff that he gets into. I must say, watching you liberal like, just lose your mind, like the cartoons when I was a kid, and like steam would come out of people's ears and their face would get red and like the hair would pop off the top of their head. I can't say how funny that is to me. You're so stupid.
Yes.
And the idea that you can never be wrong.
Right.
And like, for instance, John was just saying, you know, after you lose, there's the soul searching. Except, of course, that's really more of a, I would tell you, on the Republican side.
Yeah.
The Democrats don't do any soul searching. Every time they lose, it's point fingers and there's at somebody else, sometimes within their own party, like the way Bill Maher just savaged the Democrats like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Right after it happened. But it's usually point fingers with the Democrats, and there's nothing wrong with our message. There's something wrong with the electorate.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. It's never the message. It's never the execution of the message.
Yeah, they're right.
It's always that the people are too stupid. And I, for the life of me, in a country like the United States, for someone on Twitter to make the logical argument by looking at you and saying, what we need is a group of super smart people to tell the commoners what to do. And I can't tell you how many times I've been hit with that on Twitter. Because apparently, if you're not in support of climate change legislation, you're ignorant. It can't be that you doubt the science. It can't be that you have any questions or anything. You're just a denier. If you believe in autonomy and individual liberty, it's not because you believe in the principles of what founded this country, it's because you're an asshole that apparently doesn't understand the Krugman-like wisdom of collectivism.
Right, and you're selfish, and you don't care about the greater good.
Right. I've always said this to a liberal who no liberal has ever been able to answer this question for me. Why do you consider someone who wants to keep what they earn greedy, but someone who wants to take what I've earned is progressive? Right. I've never understood that logic. Like, if you want to call me selfish, that's fine. You know, I can understand that. That's applicable. But why am I greedy for saying I earned $100? I want to keep my $100. I don't want to take your $100. I want to keep my $100 that I've earned. That, in a liberal's mind, is greedy.
Right. Or I earned $100 and after taxes, I'd like that more than $3. Fucking idiots.
Of course. So that's the overall problem with liberals. And in some way, I hope they never catch on, because lately what's good. Look, back in the day when the Democrats controlled Congress for 40 uninterrupted years. And for those of you who are too young to remember this, Larry and I remember those days. Like, the House was a given Democratic institution.
Right.
Republicans, even when they controlled the Senate or when they had the presidency, always had to work with a Democratic Congress. That's how the result of the bipartisanship that resulted in those years wasn't that people were more civil to each other. It was the fact that the Democrats had gerrymandered and had all the voting things in place where they could not lose grip of the House.
Right.
It basically started 2 years before Kennedy and lasted all the way through Newt Gingrich in the mid-90s.
I think it started in 54.
Yeah. So basically, you had almost 40, let me repeat this, 40 uninterrupted years where one party controlled the House of Representatives.
Right. And the media in this country, by and large, didn't think to do like any stories or raise any questions about it, or, you know, because they're basically in the tank for the Democratic Party for the most part.
Of course.
So, you know, they were fine with it.
But
it only became a problem when the Republicans got control.
Exactly. So let me also throw this at you now. The Democrats, even when Democrats controlled one half of Congress, Democrats who won and lost were really grounded more towards the center. So when you look at Kennedy, for example, when he was president, Kennedy believed in the capital gains tax being as low as possible.
Right.
Right? He believed in a strong defense against the communists.
Oh, please.
Right? So listen, I disagree with him on a lot of different things. I think he was a horrible president. He let Cuba get out of control. He let the communists gain way too much ground under his presidency. He did a lot.
He screwed up
a lot of things, including Marilyn Monroe. But the point I'm trying to make is, even someone like Kennedy, his ideas were not crazy rooted. You know what I mean? It's like he didn't believe in massive wealth redistribution. He didn't believe in collectivism. He didn't believe that the government, even though his statement, I know a lot of people think, ask not what you can do for your country, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country in the Peace Corps. That, to me, is a very subtly radical statement, right? Because what he's doing is he's placing the individual subordinate to the government. And that's not what libertarians believe. That's not what people interested in liberty believe.
Wait, what he said was, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's horrible. Because what that means is that it puts the individual in a subordinate position to the government.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You could also look at it as he's trying to motivate you as an individual to get out there and do things and live your life and not to expect things from government. So in that regard,
well, the first half of the statement then is good. Ask not what your country can do for you.
But in other words, but think about it. He's not saying what you can do for the government. He's saying ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That's actually based on today's politics and since the 80s, that's more of a Republican statement than a Democrat.
Yeah.
What Democrat is saying that these days?
Well, nobody's saying that, but well, here's the thing. I think it's a lousy statement personally, I will say one thing. Even in Kennedy's, and this is the point I was trying to get to, even in Kennedy's vision, Larry and I might, which may have a difference of opinion as to what he meant, but in either case, Kennedy never assumed that the government should make you do something.
No, not at all.
Do you know what I mean? He was asking for volunteerism.
Yeah.
So compare that with what's going on today, where the government is forcibly reaching itself into your pocket, is forcibly making you purchase insurance, which I'll never let that go. I don't understand how that's constitutional to this day.
Yeah.
And hopefully we've got two Supreme Court cases which are going to be critical if Obamacare is going to continue, Judah Larry M. SCOTUS has agreed to hear them.
Yeah.
And this comes on the heels of that Obamacare architect, Gruber. Is that his name?
Yeah, John Gruber.
John Gruber, who now tape has surfaced of him saying, thank God the American people are stupid.
Yeah.
We have a stupid electorate because non-transparency is what you need to pass something like Obamacare.
Yeah, he said the lack of transparency gives you like a huge edge.
There you go.
A huge advantage in that the average person is stupid and will vote against their economic interests.
Right.
Okay. And of course, then of course, the other person had to come in naturally and put her foot in her mouth. Pelosi says she doesn't know who he is.
Right.
And just put him aside.
Despite course, the evidence that exists.
Yeah, but to show you, because this is the way we live in this world now. Yeah. Fox immediately dug up some footage of her from 2009 going, yeah, we were right in the bill hanging out with John Gruber.
You mean phone news? You liberal cocksuckers. Is that the only joke you could ever come up with? Phone news?
That's phone news. You'll see that on Twitter and by the when are they always talking about fair and balanced?
Oh God,
we report,
horrible.
You decide it should be you distort, we divide.
Oh, more liberal tears. Because now they're claiming...
But they love shit like that. Remember back in the 80s with the stupid nuclear freeze moment? They used to hand out stickers that said, you can't love your children. You can't hug your children at nuclear arms.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, liberals just love that shit because...
Slogans and causes.
Well, again, it's that arrogance that they are intellectually superior somehow. It's the arrogance of the left that they can't understand how the minimum wage adds no economic value to anything. Like, so far, I must have clicked on 5 or 6 Media Matters links that claim a liberal economist has destroyed Republican myths on minimum wage. So I said, all right, let me, in all fairness and being a reasonable man, I want to hear this argument, you know? And you tune in, and all it is either a woman or a black guy complaining that the minimum wage can't support a family of four.
Okay.
Unless it's raised. See, but that's not an economic argument. That's like an emotional plea for help. You don't destroy any economic arguments when you say a guy at McDonald's can't support a family of four on minimum wage on $7 an hour. Of course not, stupid. That's the whole point. But when you may say an economic argument, here's my economic argument. Raising the wage unilaterally for a position adds no economic value. You're not producing anything more. You're not adding a new product to the marketplace. All you're doing is adding a tax that is borne by the business owner.
Right.
And that's it. That's all you're doing.
But what their thinking behind it is, well, if you just give them more to live on,
yeah,
that'll be it. But I know what you mean, because I've read some of those arguments. There was one guy who says that, like, this minimum wage, this isn't working. I got a wife. I got 2 kids. And then you find out, like, as you read through, he goes, but I got to take like 2 or 3 buses to get to my job. And then he went through like a whole critique of like how his money's being dwindled out on him. I'm like, that's not an argument to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah.
I understand that. You know,
life's hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand that. But, and then of course, they have no argument for the fact that, look, if you have an employer and they hire 10 people, if you raise the minimum wage on it, in order to make that affordable for them, they're going to have to fire like 3 or 4 people.
Right.
They never have an answer for that. Their answer is, well, like, those people will eventually find like new jobs.
New minimum wage jobs. Or then the other thing that people forget is, as you increase the minimum wage, guess what else comes into play? Automation. Listen, you make the price of employing, say, a McDonald's hamburger flipper or French fry maker too high, guess what McDonald's is going to do? They're going to invest their capital in machines that do it for nothing.
Right.
Okay?
And they have them.
And of course they have them. Just like the toll takers. Why do you think there's toll takers at your local toll booth? Why do you think that is, Judah Larium? Is it because we don't have the technology to collect tolls otherwise?
No, of course not.
Because we have easy pass lanes that do it automatically.
Right.
Right? You don't even have to have cash in your pocket. You just read the thing and it bills you, right?
The reason for it is because there are people sitting in those booths making like $40 an hour.
Right. The unions. There's unions involved that are anti-free market, anti-voluntary exchange of goods and services. That's the only reason it's there. And that's what the minimum wage is. So can you please stop the bullshit where you claim you've destroyed economic arguments that are against the minimum wage? All you've done is present a series of sob stories. And you're putting us, meaning like guys like me and Judah Larry M, in the position where we have to come out and be quote unquote unfeeling and without emotions. But guess what? Look, the minimum wage adds no economic value to anything. Period. Period. Because the same job you did yesterday for $10 is the same job you're doing today for $15. So where was the economic value added, Judah Larry M?
There isn't.
There isn't. Like I said, it's just a tax on the employer.
And the other reason I don't accept the argument is because every time they say we should raise it, the argument is, well, this will make, you know, it's a livable wage. That's one of their big freight days. It's a livable wage. So, you know, if you raise this minimum to like $15, and one college professor I heard quoted on MSNBC once he raised to 20. And I was like, all right. So here they are. They're saying, well, this is a livable wage. You know what bothers me about it? It's kind of like the subway fare here in New York. Every time they raise it, 2 or 3 years later, guess what? We have to raise it some more because we have like a shortfall, or we're not making enough. Or they're constantly raising. Like, for instance, if you raise the minimum, whatever Obama signed for federal workers.
Yeah, like whatever it is.
Trust me, a couple of years from now, they're going to come back and say, well, no, now it needs to be this.
Well,
never ends.
Well, you've already fallen in. Yeah, but see, by engaging in that argument, you've already accepted the fallacy. And I refuse to engage in those discussions because the fallacy that there should be a minimum wage.
Well, no, but there is. And the point is, but one of the reasons I don't accept any of their arguments is because every time they get their way with raising it, they come back like a few years later and say, well, it's got to be more now.
Well, it becomes a lot easier just to solve your problems by imposing another tax on the employers,
right,
which is what the minimum wage
is. No, but the point is, if you're telling me that this is what they need to live on, then that's got to be it. You can't just keep coming back every year and a half and saying, well, you know, the cost of living, guys, they need more, they need more. And it never ends. Like, for instance, this minimum, I guarantee you they've raised it a couple of times, and they just keep doing this. Like,
right. You're also forcing people to be lawbreakers because, honestly, you're taking away the autonomy of the individual. For example, if I have a son who's a special needs kid, I don't mind him working somewhere for free or for like $2 an hour. Because I'm more interested in teaching him the life skills of what it's like to work. Do you dig?
Yeah.
I'm not interested in him earning $10 an hour at this point. I'm interested in him understanding how to go to a place, punch into work, do a job, punch out, and come home. The minimum wage law makes my son a criminal. Right? Because he can't get hired unless someone's willing to pay him $10, $15 an hour. And guess what? Nobody is. It also doesn't allow teenagers who want to get some experience on the job the ability to get experience at a wage below what their productivity warrants. So a teenager hitting the job market who doesn't have skills, doesn't have experience, doesn't deserve $10 an hour. They deserve $7 an hour or $5 an hour or whatever the business owner decides is appropriate for his business. And minimum wage laws erase all that, Judah Larry M. Minimum wage laws were never meant ever, even with the best intentions of their authors in the 20s and 30s, were never intended to support entire families. That's what people forget. They were just.
But that's what I was talking about a minute ago. And every time they say that it does, and every time that they establish, well, now it's $3 or $4, they just keep coming back with the same argument. And they keep saying, I agree with you, the minimum wage is shit. But within the concept that we have it in the context of talking about it, the problem with it is, trust me, if you were to agree to raise the minimum wage, here's what's going to happen. These few people, wherever it affects, they're going to get some more money. The business owners have to fire people because that's how they account for the money. They're not going to keep everybody. So some people are going to lose their jobs. There's no doubt. Then a couple of years from now, they're going to come back and say, well, guess what? Now it needs to be $18 an hour.
And unemployment's higher.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's why the minimum wage has got to go. Let the free market set the value. That's the other thing. How do you know that $10 is appropriate for every business across the United States? How do you know that?
Right. Plus, you know what it
is? It's part of that central planning mentality, really. Yeah. It's really part of that communist, socialist, central planning mentality. That shit only works when you've got a nation of 100,000 people where you could track the business. In a nation of 330 million people, of all these small businesses of different sizes, how do you expect the fucking government to know what's appropriate for every business? Is a $10 minimum wage appropriate for someone who's doing desk work as opposed to construction work, Judah Larry? I don't know. Does the government know? Of course not.
Well, they think they know.
Well, they think they know because they're arrogant, intellectual cocksuckers.
Yeah.
That's the whole point we're trying to make.
Yeah.
But anyway, Judah Lariam, I'm sorry to cut this off, but I want to move on to the next big topic of the week before we run out of time here.
Okay.
Which is the big debate around net neutrality. You see, because now that the Republicans are taking over, we really have Obama trying to pass all these executive orders, immigration and whatever. But the big one affecting people, and certainly would affect us, considering we're internet broadcasters, is net neutrality. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, and they want to tax the internet.
No, it's not really taxing the internet. What they want to do,
no?
What Obama is suggesting, is that the internet become, and the telcos become, regulated under Title II, I believe, and put under the auspices of, you got it, the FCC.
But that won't lead to taxing?
Well, eventually it will.
Oh, okay.
See, the alleged problem is that, you know, carriers like AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, they have a problem because there's a lot of bandwidth out there, and it's probably 80% of it is Netflix, to be honest with you. That people, you know, they watch movies on their computers and they stream over the internet. And what that's happening is that's causing a lot of clogging of the tubes, if you will, of the internet. And basically what a lot of these telcos have started doing is throttling down the speed at which you watch these movies during peak hours. So, for example, if you want to stream an HD movie at 3 p.m. on a Wednesday, it'll be slower coming down to you.
Oh, I see.
Because they're trying to discourage you from using
it. From doing it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, your solution to this and my solution would be a free market solution, which is, well, if AT&T wants to charge me a little bit more for unlimited bandwidth at any time, let them charge me.
Let them charge
me. And if they want to charge me less for, okay, I have to live by their rules.
And watch it at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that's fine too.
That's cool.
See, that's the free market response. What, of course, is the Democratic liberal big government response?
Yeah, well,
regulate it.
But I can tell you right now, because I already heard Schumer talk about this. The end game, though, is to get taxes out of it.
Well,
I've already heard them talk about that. This is like untapped revenue, and I was like, oh, please,
it's bullshit.
The end game is money.
Hold on a second. I think you're confusing. There's a separate issue around internet tax, because a lot of stuff on the internet goes untaxed. So I think that's a separate issue. But what's more about this net neutrality is that they want to make it a public utility, the internet, the way they do electric and telephone lines, right?
Right.
So they want to make it like a public utility or like TV and radio and put it under the FCC. And people are like, what's wrong with that? That'll make sure that they force those telcos to make everything equal. No discrimination on traffic. And I said, are you serious? Do none of you know the history of the F-fucking-CC? Really? The FCC, just a brief history. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is an offshoot of the Federal Radio Commission that was created by the Communications Act of 1934. And prior to that, the Federal Radio Commission was an offshoot of the Interstate Commerce Commission. Now, anybody who knows anything about liberty in this country knows that perhaps the most evil and liberty-crushing government construct in the last 200 years has been the ICC.
I thought you were going to say the IRS.
That too. But the ICC was created simply to prevent and oppose and put up barriers to entry to protect the railroads. So when trucking became a viable way of transporting goods and services, what did the ICC do?
Regulated?
They got regulation over the truck routes. Because why? Because that meant that they could protect their little fucking mafia game over there.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Radio Commission. Initially, when the FCC was created...
But they're doing this as a part of what? To get control? Just to get money?
Yes. To get control of shit. Because here's the thing, Judah Lariam. The FCC, what was it originally created to do? Do you know?
No, I don't.
It was created to handle licensing of spectrum to radios. So, for example, they were told, like, listen, if everybody does whatever they want with these radio stations, you'll have chaos. You'll have all these radio channels, and one will step on the other, and who knows what'll happen.
That's terrible.
This is what we're going to do for you, public. We're going to license that and regulate it. So when CBS buys spectrum, you know you're listening to CBS, and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Well, what did that quickly change into?
A monopoly?
Censorship.
Oh, censorship.
Right? The FCC to this day says I can't watch interracial porn on CBS, right? Why is the government violating my First Amendment right to watch whatever the fuck I want on TV? Guess who took over that role, Judah Lariam?
Who?
The FCC.
The FCC. Oh.
Right? And the FCC, despite what they say, is a barrier to entry. Can anyone just start up a broadcast radio station?
No, you can't.
Can anyone just start up a broadcast TV station?
No.
No. What has saved us in the last 20 years from this horrible way of broadcasting?
The internet. Yeah.
It's made broadcasters out of us all, if we want to be.
Yeah.
You're listening to this podcast, and I could say fuck and cunt and shit and piss and the 7 dirty words that George Carlin said are not allowed on TV. And I can watch donkey porn if I want. You know what I mean? That's not the point. The point is I have the freedom to do so.
Yeah.
This is what America's all about. This is what the First Amendment is all about. So if you take the internet, Judah Lariam, and right now I agree, they're making it sound good. Oh, we're protecting the consumer. We're making sure that nobody will charge you more for the fast lane of the internet.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds good until 5 years from now,
right,
when you're not allowed to listen to The Riot anymore. Yeah. You're not allowed to watch porn in your basement anymore. You're not allowed to watch political speech, like libertarian speech, because it conflicts with whoever's in charge in Washington.
Right.
All right? So can you please, please, tech people, and I'm talking to my fellow nerds out there because I'm one of you, take your head out of your ass and understand the history of what it is you're promoting. You're promoting the F-fucking-CC. Remember Howard Stern and everything? Fuck the FCC.
Yeah.
They are not your friend. I don't care. They've never been a friend. And guess what? When the new technology comes out, whether it's satellites or brainwaves or whatever to power the internet, if you put the internet under the FCC, guess who owns whatever that new technology is?
The government.
The government, the motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And there's no bigger...
And that's a bad idea.
Yeah, there's no bigger barrier to innovation than the government. So anyway, Judah Lariam, I just want to end on that. Everybody out there, call your representative, send them emails, send them letters, tell them to fuck net neutrality the way that Obama has laid out. It's bullshit, and it's going to be the end of the free internet if you let the FCC regulate it. Trust me on that.
Okay. And on this note...
Oh, you don't want to yell with me, Judah Lariam?
No, I don't. We have to wrap up.
All right.
So fuck the FCC.
Fuck the FCC.
Fuck Obama.
Fuck Obama and boo-hoo.
While we can still say that.
And boo-hoo liberals.
Boo-hoo liberals. You lost the Senate. Fuck you twice.
In both ears. Until next week, then, this has been your host, Big Fat John.
And Judah Lariam.
Peace.
Join us every week at theriotshow.com to follow the latest exploits of Big Fat John and Judah Lariam. This is Mark, the man with a golden voice, and my testicles are killing me.